Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back. It's a Senior Bowl special. Very excited to go over our week of observations or a couple days of practice observations from down in Mobile. He's Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish. We are back in Chicago. Eric, how was it getting back to the family? It felt like kind of a long week.
Yeah, it was. Long but short, too. It's funny how quick it can turn around. But yeah, it was good to get down there, see a few people, see a few players, and it's good to kind of get the eye test on a lot of these guys that we've either seen on TV or read about or talked to people about, and now you have a better picture of how they play and where they fit in the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. That eye test term is a good one. We're going to go to there in a minute, but let me just, I just want to say this at the top. It was a long day of travel yesterday, but Eric was a great travel partner. We had a lot of fun. We had a good time down in Mobile checking out players, but Eric, the taste test, the best new prospect that I evaluated in Mobile wasn't a player at all. It was a beer. The High Lie IPA, I believe it's Cigar City in Tampa Bay. You were familiar with it. I was not. We're both kind of craft beer connoisseurs, and it shot right up my list. Pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah, actually, it was new to me, too. I it's funny, right before we connected on this podcast, I texted my parents, who are down in Florida now. I'll be seeing them for a quick visit with the kids, and I said, be sure to pick up some High Life for when I'm down there. You know, I think it's only available, as you said, like in Florida and Alabama, maybe in that southern region down there. So we're already, to me, that's day one prospect right there.
Yeah, no doubt. I was very pleasantly surprised. And frankly, Mobile's nightlife overall has taken a nice step forward. That nothing against Veats, which there's definitely the old kind of allure to that place too. But it's a bit of a dump. It's just kind of fun, the random people you'll run into, the random NFL types. So anyway, High Lie Beer. If you haven't checked it out, you should. Cigar City, Tampa Bay. And they're getting some free promotion on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I should probably also mention the promotion that is not free. We're still sponsored by Loot Crate, the best surprise you know is coming. Check them out at lootcrate.com. And our own self-promotion, check us out on iTunes. Please subscribe and leave us a rating and review while you're there for all the Pro Football Weekly podcasts. It's very much appreciated. It's a fun time of year at Pro Football Weekly. We just launched a draft newsletter. We're starting to go wall-to-wall draft coverage. Actually, after we send Hub and Eric down to the Super Bowl next week, I'll be holding down the fort back home, putting the finishing touches on our draft magazine that's going to be available soon. So lots of exciting stuff happening. And Eric, let's just dive right in. You had mentioned the eye test and which players pass them. That can kind of cut both ways because Josh Allen clearly passes the eye test, right? A big dude with a rocket arm, all the athleticism and physical traits that you're looking for. And I should preface this, we missed the Thursday practice, and yep. Apparently his trajectory continued going in the right direction. He started the week kind of slow, but he did kind of gradually come on. Now, all that being said, I still don't believe it's unfair to maybe use the word inconsistent to describe Josh Allen, and that's certainly the one that I think would have first came to mind even before he got to Mobile. Am I being reasonable with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, right before we got on, I did talk to somebody who was down there, left after the practices yesterday, and confirmed what a lot of people in the media wrote, which was Allen had a much better day throwing the football, clearly his best performance on Thursday. So we saw an upward trajectory. We saw a rough first day, a strong start to day two, but then some, you know, fallbacks along the way, some poor stuff. And, you know, when he's throwing against air, he looks amazing, right? I mean, this is how you draw up a quarterback. But it was in kind of the pressure situations in either full team work or, you know, shell stuff that they were working on that he didn't look as good. But again, Thursday seemed to be a stronger day. There's still a feeling that with all his gifts, we're probably looking at a first round pick and maybe a high one. But, you know, Baker Mayfield to me stood out more. There are other guys like Darnold and Rosen who I think will go ahead of him. So it's going to be fascinating to see where he ends up settling in. I still think he's probably a first-round pick, though.
Yeah, I do too, and I don't know if it's because it's going to be fully warranted or if it's because it's the nature of the NFL in 2018 and teams that, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, generally at least, you don't have much of a chance and teams scramble for him. Of course, the other big name, Eric, Baker Mayfield, made the late arrival, and he has a flair for the dramatic, obviously. And if he said his mom was sick back home in Texas, we send her the best, certainly. But the eyes, as always, are kind of glued on to Baker Mayfield whenever he's on the football field, and they were treated to what I thought was a pretty impressive showing. Despite him showing up late, he seemed to kind of dive into things a little bit quicker, and I knew he had a strong arm. I came away even more impressed, Derek, after getting a chance to watch it in person.
He's got a real aggressive mentality throwing the football. I mean, he wants to attack, and you know, you even saw that in the practice sessions, and you know, he even took off and scrambled a couple times, flashing that athletic ability, and he just seems to have a real confidence in his game. I mean, it was obvious the last, you know, few years at Oklahoma, and going up against NFL type talent, you know, younger guys, but still prospects who will go in the first, you know, four or five rounds, he looked really good. I mean, obviously there were some, you know, some inconsistencies here, a little bit of accuracy, a couple of wobblers, but really throw to throw, start to finish, he was probably the best quarterback down there. And I see no reason why he can't be that, maybe that third guy after Rosen and Darnold, who's taken. Now he may end up being the best in the group. You never know. The fit is important. You know, you can just see him, if he gets matched up with the right team, the right coach, the right OC, used properly, he could be good.
Yeah, he seemed to be certainly the most polished guy down there, and that was a little, well, I don't know if it's ironic or not. Allen came from the more pro-style system, but obviously the lower level of competition, Mayfield was going to have to adjust to the under-center stuff and going through progressions, and we only got a little bit of a taste of that, but I definitely saw some pretty impressive rollouts, some snaps from under-center, and again, he just drills those sideline throws and generally made good decisions too, so impressive stuff there, frankly, from both quarterbacks. Again, I want to make sure I'm giving Allen the justice that he deserves, or not the justice, but just kind of the accolades that he deserves, because there's a lot to be said for starting slow and then picking things up rather than kind of just getting sort of locked into those doldrums and not picking it up, which was not the case at all. So
yeah.
Eric, I do have to ask quickly, because it was my favorite story all week, came from Pro Football Weekly, came from you. I'm thrilled that was the case. Tell the listeners just real quickly about Kyle Laletta. You had an awesome story about the Richmond quarterback and maybe Bill Belichick dream prospect, and I don't think he did anything to dissuade those possibilities down in Mobile.
Well, right, and if you want to paint it in that way, I was reading about him a little bit this season, and you know, you start digging into his story. His dad played quarterback at Navy. His uncle was a punter at Navy. You know, keep that all in mind. Then you find out he was a pretty good lacrosse player in high school too. Even considered playing that in college. And okay, lacrosse, Navy, punter. I mean, if that isn't like Bill Belichick Nirvana right there, I don't know what is. And you know, and if you think about what the Patriots did with Jimmy Garoppolo, which is spend the 60th pick on the draft on a kid from Eastern Illinois, it's not a stretch to say that they could do the same thing, having traded Garoppolo with Kyle Laletta, who played at Richmond and FCS school, and he was very accurate. I mean, that was, you know, and it was not just in college. He did it this week too. I thought, especially on Wednesday, he looked polished. You know, he looked like the best quarterback on the South team, I thought. Just had real control. He played, you know, was coached down there by Bill O'Brien and his staff. Obviously some connections to the Patriots there as well. So, I mean, look, he's going to be attractive to a lot of teams. This isn't just a Patriots thing. Let's not make it out to be anything more than it's not. But I had fun with the story. He's a sharp kid. And I would venture to say that I think he was the third best quarterback that I saw from the practices, behind the raw upside and the high ceiling of Allen, and then the all-around game of Baker Mayfield.
Sure. Well, with all due respect to Saran Neal of Jacksonville State, I don't even know if I'm saying his name right, so yeah. I hope I am, and other guys like Brandon Silvers of Troy, I do agree with you. He flashed the most, Laletta, that is. The one thing I don't remember if you put in the story, Eric, was his dad a left-footed punter in college, or we don't know if we could take it quite that far?
Yeah, I actually don't know the footedness. I think it was his uncle was the punter.
Right? Oh, excuse me. Yes, you're right, his uncle.
And his uncle's name is Lex Laletta. If that doesn't sound like the villain from a Superman movie or something like that, I don't know what does. But this story obviously has a cute angle to it. But he's a football player, and I don't know. I'm going to put this out here now in you know, we're not even in February yet, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's a late second round pick. I think he's going to be a top 100 guy, maybe even a top 75 guy.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, it sounds like it could potentially be Jimmy Garoppolo all over again. So keep an eye on this exciting prospect. And please, if you haven't read the story, get over to ProFootballWeekly.com. You will laugh out loud. It really was excellent.
Thank you.
Yes, I was honored to edit it. It was a lot of fun. So, all right, Eric, we got lots of other positions to get to. There were more than just quarterbacks in Mobile, but I think I am going to move right to wide receivers, and I got to tee it up to you this way. I fall in love with a day two wide receiver every year in Mobile. Cooper Kupp last year, Sterling Shepard the year before. I don't know, and they weren't alone either. I mean, I really like Zay Jones too. I know his rookie year didn't go according to plan, but it just seems like every year our Darius Stewart was there. There's a lot of guys that that seem to jump out that fall right after that round one wheelhouse, and there was no exception this season. Guys like Penn State's,
Deshaun Hamilton.
Deshaun Hamilton, I think, might have been my favorite guy down there, but certainly the Oklahoma State teammate that didn't get quite as much pub, and Marcel Aitman was excellent too. There's a lot of really good guys. So I guess I want to first tee it up to you this way. Do I just immediately notice the receivers because it's kind of an easy position to watch on the practice field versus like getting your eyes in the trenches and trying to focus on one dude? It seems like the drills are very accessible to check them out. And then if you're kind of watching the quarterbacks, I guess that kind of naturally takes you right to the receivers as well.
Yeah, and it's tough, obviously. I kind of equate wide receivers to the defensive ends in one-on-one drills. They're going to have an advantage, right? Because when they go up against corners in one-on-ones, there's no safety help, right? These guys are just locked on an island. It's going to naturally favor the offensive player, much like when, you know, DNs and offensive tackles go head-to-head, the defensive player gets the edge because the tackle doesn't have any help. But you make a good observation, which is it's sometimes easier to notice these guys. But that said, if they're not catching balls that are in their frame, if they're running sloppy routes, that also can be a negative too. Now, maybe put too much into it, but you're right. You know, the other names I would throw in there, Michael Gallup had some moments. Alan Lazard from Iowa State, you know, flashed a little bit as well. I think there were a couple others. You know, Jamon Moore came on a little bit from Missouri. He's probably more of a day three guy. But Washington was probably tops. Byron Pringle from Kansas State, somebody to keep an eye on as well. And, yeah, overall, it was a pretty good group. Jahleel Scott was a little more fluid for a 6'5 guy than I thought he might be. And that probably helped him out quite a bit.
Yeah, Jahleel Scott out of New Mexico State measured a little bit shorter than we thought, but definitely still one of those you know, big body, go up and get it types. And like you said, he did make some plays over the middle as well. Thanks for picking me up on the name. I'm about to say he's my favorite guy, and I'm drawing a blank on Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State. Eric, I thought Penn State overall was extremely well represented. You could throw the tight end in too, and Mike Gesicki, number 88, making plays all throughout the 2 days we were able to observe. And then the two defensive backs and Marcus Allen in the long corner Christian Campbell as well. But you mentioned Michael Gallup too, and I think Gallup and Hamilton kind of similar, at least body types, both about 6'1", 205, 210, and sort of different in the way they go about it, though. Hamilton, his route running was as impressive as anyone I saw in Mobile, and then Gallup just always seemed to be making plays with the football in his hands downfield. I know his speed and quickness were giving some DBs trouble.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because Penn State's offense was a little bit unorthodox the last couple years, and so maybe some NFL people were a little bit suspicious of that in terms of, you know, maybe the pass blocking and the wide receivers, that sort of thing. I don't think they're that way anymore. I think, you know, what Joe Moorhead did may not be what NFL teams are ready to run, but that shouldn't negate the fact that they're producing some good NFL talent down there. And yeah, the tight end Gesicki, as you mentioned, I think he separated himself as one of the best players down here. Looks like a little bit more of a vertical threat than Troy Fumagalli out of Wisconsin. Both guys look pretty good. Yeah, and Hamilton, I don't know that he'll get the Chris Godwin treatment. Godwin kind of shot up boards last year and was a late riser, had the huge Rose Bowl, and then had a really nice postseason and run up to the draft. But you know, he's got to be in that sort of same range, second, third round, I would think, unless I'm maybe underrating him a little bit. I don't know that he's a late first round pick, but we'll see. I mean, we've seen people come from farther places and end up in the top 40, 50 picks, but he impressed.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if he runs like Godwin, who knows?
Yeah.
That's when things really got out of, you know, got crazy with the hype for him after the combine. I think he was one of the fastest receivers there. Kind of blew everyone away because he's a little bit bigger body type too. But, yeah, just someone that, that jumped out consistently. And again, Michael Gallup too. Eric had the great line. He has to be a Denver Bronco. Get it? Ha ha, Gallup. He's really fast.
So that was I know.
So that was pretty good. All right, so where do we go from here? Let's go to the one or two kind of real big stories entering the week, Eric, and it's still, you know, for us leaving the week, it's just as great of a feel-good story. There was no more inspirational player there than Shaquem Griffin, the linebacker out of Central Florida. Everyone should probably know the story by now, had his left hand amputated when he was just 4 years old, and yet he was one of the more productive linebackers in all of college football the past two seasons. And, Eric, on the practice fields in Mobile, we saw him line up everywhere from edge setter up on the line of scrimmage. To playing deep safety on the second practice Wednesday, and Bill O'Brien said that was obviously by design, trying to move him around and play him in as many different spots as possible and see how he kind of assimilates. And by all accounts, I think this kid is pretty adaptable, and certainly that speed, all the things that were on tape at Central Florida seem to show up again in Mobile.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we as writers and obviously the TV folks and radio folks can easily latch on to the feel-good nature of this story. And,
yes.
And the excitement of a player reaching this level of production in college football while missing a hand. I mean, it doesn't even, you know, it doesn't make sense. It shouldn't happen, right? This is a once-in-a-generation type story. So he was a great college football player for a team that, you know, excelled this year. That was great. His brother played in the league, so we know he has great genes, obviously, great football instincts. It clearly courses through their veins. But on top of that, he did not look out of place whatsoever. Now, there may be issues with shedding blocks, you know, intercepting passes, doing all the things that two-handed people sometimes struggle with, right?
Yeah.
But like you said, they put him in this kind of joker role where he moved around. I liked Phil Savage's line. He said, at worst, he's going to be your special teams demon. You know what I mean? He's going to be able to be a four-down player, I think, at some point. So, yeah, there's absolutely no question that he belongs in the NFL. The big sort of drama right now, which we didn't really talk about much in Mobile, but he has yet to receive a combine invitation. I don't know if the NFL has forgotten what the combine is meant to do, but it is really for interviews for the teams, but also medical testing. And I would think that the league would want to make sure it had all the information about, you know, the strength in his arm, the hand, everything it wanted to look at. This is what the combine was made for. So I hope he gets his invitation. You can't tell me he's not one of the 330 best prospects. That's how many guys get invited. So Griffin belongs. He should be drafted this year. There's no question about it. He's an intriguing player.
You've just made a great point, Eric. I mean, this isn't like last year, and frankly, teams were upset that Joe Mixon wasn't, again, very different circumstances, just pointing out, because you said interviews and medicals, and you're absolutely right, those are the two most important aspects of the combine. A lot of clubs were pissed that Joe Mixon wasn't invited last year so they could dig into his background, and they should be equally kind of miffed. And there's time left, and I still would imagine that Griffin is going to be at the combine, because just the talent speaks for itself, and it would just be such a huge missed, you know, it would be tone deaf by the NFL, but I guess I can't be surprised if I'm saying that, because how many times have we seen and said it before? But there's a ways to go. I imagine we'll see Griffin at the combine, and it was just a pleasure getting to talk to the young man. He is he lights up a room, and his story is impossible not to be inspired by. So pretty cool stuff there. On the flip side of things, let's stay with some of the defenders, some of the edge defenders. Tell the listeners about Marcus Davenport, Eric, the straight out of Central Casting, University of Texas San Antonio edge rusher. He's only been playing football for a couple years. He is a just a monster physical specimen, and yet he didn't seem to really kind of stick out. It seemed like he'd have a chance to be a man among boys, even coming from UTSA, and he kind of stood out for the wrong reasons, I'd have to say. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and that was another player that I asked the evaluator about before we jumped on here this morning, and he said, you know, he was maybe a little more impressed than we were, and I think some of that may have had to do that, similar to Allen. He had all the physical gifts. He was blessed, you know. I mean, this guy looks like, you know, a Ziggy Ansah, Julius Peppers type of player, where it's, you know, long, athletic. He can, you know, he's not tight in the hips. He's strong. He's, you know, in fact, the few times I saw him win individual battles usually was with the bull rush. So I think he needs some refinement as far as pass rush technique is concerned. And you look back and, you know, I think half his sacks came in two games, you know, against lesser competition. So there is still some room for improvement. I think a lot of people had questions about Jason Pierre-Paul coming out. Now, maybe Pierre-Paul was a little bit more of a freakish athlete, but you know, we'll see how he works out. I expect Marcus Davenport to kind of boost his stock with a good workout in Indy. So yeah, maybe not the best week. He didn't exactly like lock in that top 20 selection everybody was thinking. Some guys sort of saw him as a second round pick that you mold and you know, expect year two to be his breakout year three. Other people were a little more impressed. So I don't know if we didn't get the full picture down there or if this is just one opinion, but I don't think he hurt himself, but I don't think he boosted his stock either. So he's still got some work to do. This is a guy who could end up being a top 10 selection, or he could slide down to the end of round one, maybe early round two. There's still a variable there.
It's the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. He is Eric. I am Arthur. You should check us out on iTunes. Subscribe and leave us a rating and a review while you're there. We got about another 10 minutes or so. We're just chatting Senior Bowl observations. And fortunately, I'm leaning on Eric a little bit here because he just got off the phone with someone who knows more than either of us do. And that's always helpful to bring to the podcast. And I don't want to sell this group short in terms of front seven havoc wreakers because, Eric, we saw more than a few. Maybe the one who opened the most eyes was this Ogbonnia Ogbonnia. I think I can comfortably say the first name from Oklahoma. I think he only measured about 6'1", 240, but he's got 34-inch arms, and his first step off the ball was as dynamic and as troublesome for offensive linemen by day two as anyone I saw, Eric. Tell the listeners about Ogbonnia, and then there were some other guys. You wrote about some North Carolina State, I believe interior rushers that really helped themselves as well.
Yeah, Ogbonnia Okoronkwo. I had it too. No, let me get this out there for the record so I don't botch this again. Ogbonnia Okoronkwo. There you go.
There you go. Very well done.
I got it off my chest. I'll never have to say it again. He's right. I mean, he's undersized. I mean, he's got the arm length, so I think he can still play on the edge, but you got to be smart about how you use him and not ask him to stunt inside a lot and things like that and take on double teams. I mean, I don't think that's going to be where he wins, but a really interesting rusher. Yeah, he had some real quickness. He could dip a little bit and, you know, had a counter move or two that I saw. So he's kind of that, you know, stumpy but athletic 245-pound edge guy who I think in time can play out in space too. So I think there's a real nice projection for him as well. And, you know, I would say the kid from Rutgers too, I thought he was probably the second best rusher this week that we saw too. Kokomo Toure is his name. But that's probably the two guys outside of Davenport, Kamoko Toure from Rutgers, a kid who hasn't played much football. I mean, his parents were Muslim. They didn't want him playing football. They kind of were against it. He got into the game, showed some real burst, wasn't good at all in dropping. So he's a kind of a one-trick pony a little bit, but a very good one-trick. So the interior guys that I like, the North Carolina State kids, I thought were really impressive.
B.J. Hill. Yeah.
And the other kid as well from Justin Jones. I thought both of them looked really good. I thought maybe Jones had a little bit more burst. He's a little leaner. He kind of wins with power, but also, you know, finishes well. I think the one thing the scout mentioned just when I talked to him earlier today, he said he doesn't get off the ball exceptionally fast, but he has good sort of makeup speed. So he's got the burst. He's just got to kind of get a feel for the snap a little bit better. Whereas Hill, maybe more of a run stopper, kind of reminded me of a little like Dalvin Tomlinson, second round pick, Giants, started 16 games, was really good as a rookie, will probably be the unheralded guy. And he played a ton of snaps, played like 800 snaps, which is pretty incredible for an interior guy who weighs 325 pounds.
Yeah, no doubt. One more name, just like kind of an interior havoc wreaker to throw into the mix, is Andrew Brown of Virginia. Was lining up at the three technique and just giving offensive linemen fits with his quickness. Greg Gabriel, kind of our PFW draft expert, the author of our draft magazine that'll be on newsstands, believe it or not, here within the next handful of weeks. We got about two more weeks until we go to the printer, but he kind of clued us on Andrew Brown, and Brown didn't disappoint. He is a handful, about 6'4", 285 pounds, actually a little bit undersized to be working on the inside there, but just wins with quickness and looks like an exciting player, someone to keep monitoring. A couple guys dropped out, Eric, that we were a little disappointed we didn't get to see more of. Dallas Godert had an early hamstring injury that had him off the field quickly, I believe, in day one. What we got to see from him was pretty limited. Nathan Shepard out of Fort Hays State was kind of turning some heads a little bit and ended up getting hurt. So, unfortunately, that's kind of, you know, happens every year, and we just have to kind of see if they can pick up any type of early momentum they were building. But what about Dallas Godert? He's an interesting story. He could kind of be potentially this year's Adam Sheehan, the Bears' second rounder last year out of Ashland. It sounds like if his, you know, post All-Star game circuit does go well,
I think he's a first round pick. I get the feeling he's going to be. He'll come in more polished than Shaheen, excuse me. And I think he'll just have a better feel for. He's been doing this a little longer than Shaheen did. You know, Shaheen had the background in basketball and, you know, transferred schools and kind of got into football a little later. And I think his upside is still there. I think Dallas Godert is going to end up going somewhere between the 20th and the 40th pick. So I'll sort of venture to say that he'll end up somewhere in that late first round. Maybe a team like Jacksonville could use an athletic tight end, maybe the Ravens, somebody like that. You know, a team that maybe doesn't have a ton of glaring needs but really wants that kind of mismatch piece to help the passing game out. So
yeah,
I think he'll be fine. Obviously, the hamstring, a very precautionary thing. Shepard, you mentioned, I didn't get to see him in day one. But apparently he won a lot of individual battles and was really, really showing something. So he's one we're going to keep our eye on. And that hand injury doesn't sound like it's real serious. But, yeah, Nathan Shepard, file the name away. He's taken a very circuitous route to this point, but he showed he belonged with the big boys when he was in there.
Yeah, no doubt. And Dallas Godert, guys, has an interesting backstory. We didn't, unfortunately, get to it at ProFootballWeekly.com just yet, but apparently he is a former – he likes to unicycle. He comes from a tiny town, went to South Dakota State, and he's got a very interesting backstory. He's a big kid, 6'4", 260, and he moves well. Before he went down day one, I saw him catch a seam ball in individual drills and get in the end zone, and it really looked impressive. He was not lumbering by any means, so an interesting guy to monitor. Eric, just a few more minutes here. I'm trying to think about what other names have jumped out. I know I liked Kalen Ballage, the Arizona State running back. I hope I'm saying his name right. Ballage, a big dude, and you had an interesting comp. Not to say he's going to go, you know, be an all-pro by year two or whatever, but just size-wise, maybe stylistically, not as polished as a receiver just yet. But David Johnson was the name you mentioned, just because Ballage, 6'3", 230. That is unusual running back size, but David Johnson shares those unusual physical traits anyway.
I was shocked because I had kind of – the reputation on him was that he was kind of a straight-line guy. Yeah, he could add some burst, but that he wasn't a make-you-miss kind of guy at all at that size. Understandable, right? Or that he didn't have the lateral quickness. He may not have been as good a receiver as the other back at Arizona State, whose name escapes me right now. But yeah, he looked good. I mean, he looked really good. Jalen Samuels from NC State showed some great quickness. I think he's going to be a sort of a chess piece, maybe not a true running back, not a true tight end, but somebody who can kind of work the the outside as a pass catcher. But yeah, Ballage, I could see him playing in a feature role in the NFL. I don't know if that makes him how high a pick or what, but especially with a deep running back class. But yeah, he looked good. And you know, some of the other names that pop up in me, we talked about Kazir White from West Virginia, the safety, maybe a box safety type linebacker, kind of a tight end shadower. He looked really good. MJ Stewart, the returner in the corner from North Carolina. Trayvon Henderson, the safety from Hawaii. Those were a few other guys who stood out for me.
Yeah, I'll throw in one more safety too. Armani Watts out of Texas A&M had an interception on day two, and I heard more than a few people I really respect giving him a lot of praise. So another interesting name to watch. And Eric, let's end here. Just got about another couple minutes. I mentioned at the top that I feel like the Senior Bowl is kind of a breeding ground for day two wide receivers who can come in and make an impact. It's also certainly in recent years earned a bit of a reputation for turning small school offensive linemen into draft risers. And I'm not sure this year is going to be any exception with guys like Will Hernandez of UTEP. It seemed like everyone was talking about the big boy guard. Checked in at 6'2", 340 pounds, and he was just dominating dudes both in one-on-one and team drills. And I don't know if it was as complete of a performance for him. Maybe you'll be able to weigh in a little bit more. But the offensive tackle out of Humboldt State, Alex Kappa, looked like he won more battles than he lost. And it also sounded like the Army center, the Army left tackle, Brett Voth, was gaining steam as we were kind of on our way out of Mobile, too. He's the first ever West Point attendee in Mobile, so that's certainly an interesting backstory.
For a team that threw about 19 passes all season, I'm not even joking when I say that either. I mean, they threw the ball about twice a game. He didn't look out of place. I mean, that was the, you know, at worst, that's the best, you know, that's really good, praise for him. So I think he's a great developmental tackle. Remember Julian Davenport last year from Bucknell?
Yeah,
he obviously had a little more experience. Yeah, fourth round pick to the Texans, started playing a little at the end of the year. That's kind of my comp right now for him. Maybe not quite the athlete that Davenport was. Davenport kind of a basketball guy, but the same way that, hey, year one, get him in there as your swing tackle. Maybe he's inactive certain game days. But by year two, maybe he ends up being a really good, player in a more of a run-centric offense, but somebody who didn't look out of place. Yeah, so Toth, I think, has some real upside there. Kappa, you mentioned there were a couple guys who gave him trouble. He seemed to have trouble with a few individual players, but like you said, he won matchups. I think he'll end up being a second-round pick. You know, I think he could go in that – that same range that the Hobart kid, Ali Marpet, went when he was, the 50th selection overall or something like that. So he didn't look out of place. The other offensive lineman who caught my eye was Isaiah Wynn from Georgia. That was the one who, coming in, I think everybody sort of felt like was the best talent at the position, next to Hernandez maybe. But Wynn, even though he's a little short, he's 6'2", 305, something like that, he's got long arms. He's played left guard and left tackle. I think he can end up sneaking into the end of round one. I think he's that kind of player.
Interesting stuff, yeah. But there was a lot of talent up front, certainly on display. A lot of talent overall. It was a fun year in Mobile, and it'll be interesting to see how the game plays out. Although I know many of the decision makers have already made their way out of town and have gotten the evals they needed from a few days of practice. But I know we had a fun time down there. I know we'll continue to be breaking it down at Pro Football Weekly. And Eric, I appreciate you taking the time. Your next stop is Minneapolis. You basically are coming home to change out your suitcase and give the family hugs and kisses, and then you're up to the senior Super Bowl.
No. I'm here to do laundry for the kids. That's what I'm here to do. Make sure that they're taken care of while my wife gets some much needed time off. But you're right. Good, yes, man. I'll be heading up there Monday and excited to get in front of the Eagles and the Patriots.
Yeah, no doubt. Eric and Hub will both be up in Minneapolis next week. We'll have a podcast for you. I'm not sure exactly what form it'll come in, what day we'll have it for you, but we'll definitely have something talking Super Bowl. And as always, we appreciate you for joining us on the Senior Bowl special podcast. We had a lot of fun breaking it down. One more time, check us out at profootballweekly.com. All of our stuff there. Sign up for this draft newsletter if you want all the insider info leading up to the draft. And check us out on iTunes as well. The PFW podcast, the PFW Bears podcast. We got all kinds of stuff over there. We appreciate you guys. We'll be back next week, and hope you enjoy the weekend.